Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 190 of the show, inching towards the big 200, which feels nice. Quite a fun number to hit, but of course, lots to talk about, especially over here on the West Coast, mainly in Whitecaps land. We got some extensions, got new signing out of nowhere. Is the dream center back edition finally in? Well, we'll try our best to dive into what the newest Whitecap center back can bring, and if he can, help fix it what has been an area of need for a while. But meanwhile, over in Spain, the Whitecaps have rolled on, played what, 4 preseason games since we last spoke, which is funny because I guess it shows how long it's been since the last episode. But at the same time, I joke, it's been like 9 days since the last episode. That's just shows how chaotic the Spanish schedule has been for the Whitecaps, who are, of course, amping up for Champions Cup action, slowly inching towards us closer and closer as we reach the month of February all of a sudden, which is a whole other story. What a hot start to 2024. But before we dive into all of those great things, I'm your co-host, Alexander Gonger-Ruzic, joined, as always, by Samuel Rowan. And I mean, before we dive into all these, you know, such a varied episode, where we're kind of at that time where you get signings, you get contracts, you get all the administrative stuff, but then you actually get games too. But then we couldn't even watch the games because, shout out to MLS, unless you're Inter Miami, your preseason doesn't matter. Although poor Inter Miami, some of their players that they're getting absolutely rinsed like a bar of soap to go all over the world and play games because Lionel Messi effect and all that. But jokes aside, Sam, how are you doing as we kind of navigate this weird time in Whitecaps land and I guess Canadian soccer as a whole?
Yeah, doing very well. It's we've been saying that I feel like to open every episode here in 2024, but man, the season, the start of the season at least, is not that far away. Like, here we are recording on Tuesday, January 30th, and next Wednesday night, the Vancouver Whitecaps are playing in CONCACAF Champions Cup action against Tigres over on the island. It's all come together very quickly. The Spain camp was starting, and now it's done and dusted, and Vancouver's, you know, making their preparations to head back to Canada, to Vancouver, to train and get set up for that match. So I feel like I'm still very much in off-season mode. It's taken a little bit of time to get into gear here. But as you said, Alex, some reasonably big news items to talk about today. I mean, first and foremost, the Ryan Gauld extension. We were talking 3-4 weeks ago about, you know, some of his comments in the press and how the longer the Whitecaps waited to get business done, it could become a pressure point for the season. That's dealt with at this point. Ryan Gauld, at least from a contractual standpoint, is looking to be here for the foreseeable future in Vancouver. So I think that lays the groundwork nicely to get the season off to a good start. Tristan Blackman as well, securing him, adding to the reinforcements to the defensive line that the Whitecaps have implemented here. So we'll talk about the new signing in Bjorn. We'll talk about those extensions and dive into, you know, it's a short highlight package for every match. There's a lot of young guys playing. There's mixed up lineups. So we're not going to put too much stock in these preseason matches we saw very little from, but we'll share some thoughts and comments and also look ahead to Tigres a little bit. EAFC completely ruined MLS's kit launch, so that's fun, and we'll talk a little bit about what we've seen from the Whitecaps kit so far to finish things off, and then obviously, you know, it's been a crazy week and a half in terms of Canadian soccer news overall. There have been some really big stories, so maybe we'll share a word or two on that as well. But you know, Whitecaps preseason mode, we're ramping things up, and glad to have you with us. So can't wait to dive in.
Yeah, so I mean, let's just start with the preseason games because, of course, maybe not the biggest news. That's why I just can kind of go over it because, like you mentioned, it's so hard again because preseason at the end of the day means close to nothing. It does mean a little bit in terms of giving an idea of where, you know, where the staff views certain players, whose stock is up, whose stock is down, who maybe gets a few more minutes. You know, like it's been interesting to see guys like Bilal Halbouni in the first few games who's getting a good chunk of minutes. Jeevan Bodwal, you're kind of like, okay, interesting. Then, of course, you're like, okay, which of the big guns are playing? All of a sudden, you this is where you figure out Ali Ahmed's unfortunately got a sports hernia and, you know, out for what, about a month, 2 months as he recovers from that. It's just where you find out all those little things. But that's, you know, what's great about it. Unfortunately for us, it's really hard to glean anything when, again, it's just highlight packages. Of course, that's just sometimes the nature of the business, especially when you're in the Whitecaps case and you're out of country or you're in a completely foreign land. Sometimes you don't always have that much power over that sort of stuff versus if you're, you know, at home in your own stadium and stuff like that. Of course, the Whitecaps, what, all four of their preseason games have essentially been on training pitches in Marbella. So I can't imagine the infrastructure was, you know, the easiest versus if you're, you know, in big stadiums playing these sorts of games. But because of that, yeah, it makes it such an interesting just to analyze because I was going through it. It's like there's really not much you could take. I was kind of looking at lineups, highlights, and like you can take small takeaways. But for those who are kind of unfamiliar, the Whitecaps played four preseason games over a span of about 10 days. First, they ended up beating Diosgyor 1-0 on the 20th. Then they ended up playing Huskas Akademia, ended up losing 2-0. Ended up playing Bakka Topola, lost 2-1. And then today, as of recording, played Hogesund and drew 1-1. So one win, two losses, one draw, kind of a mixed bag. Some goods like Nicola Florio Chateau scored in the first game. Fafa Pico got a goal. Brian White scored. But then also, you know, some late goals, some frustrations in that regard. So overall, I mean, a mixed bag from what we can glean about all that. Of course, for all we know, the Whitecaps could have dominated all four games and had the results they did. They also could have played poorly in all of them. We don't know. So it's hard to say how they're actually trending towards preseason because I think at the end of the day, that's what matters in preseason is performances. But overall, I'd say, you know, pretty solid. They got, 360 minutes under the belt. They got some good minutes for some interesting trialists that look like some guys just needing to get their legs up to speed. Gold looks like he played a good chunk, which is what you want. You want him to be full fitness, ready, up and going for the season. So, yeah, overall, I'd say a mixed bag.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, I think particularly detailed and insightful evaluations are hard to come by given the data to go off of. But as you said, I think the one thing that the only way in which preseason matters is in terms of those internal squad battles and which players are going to be on the rise, which players are going to compete for more minutes, which players had a good offseason and are ready to hit the ground running coming into the season. I think you can pick up the odd thing about those kinds of trends. And so, yeah, I think, you know, ultimately the results don't matter too much. When we talk about, you kind of ran through the results themselves. Something to note within that is the Whitecaps giving up a bunch of late goals in those matches. Really, you know, I think probably, at least if you take Vanni Sartini's evaluation, and I think it seemed reasonably accurate, at least from the highlight packages, that, you know, the Whitecaps dominating possession, being on the front foot in terms of chance creation, but maybe with some of those younger players in the lineup still trying to play in that very aggressive, forward-leaning fashion, got caught out a few times, either in transition or set pieces near the end of those matches. So that's something you learn from. I think probably a good experience for those young guys, you know, put them under pressure against some decent competition and see how they do. And I guess in terms of individual players, I mean, this is just from the highlight packages, but, you know, Fafa Picot looked off to a good start in Vancouver Whitecaps colors, like, you know, looked spry and quick on his feet. I think the way that Vancouver is going to play this season, which seems to be trending very, you know, as I said, very aggressively on the ball as much as they can. Picot likes the ball at his feet, likes to put defenders under pressure. It seems like this system under Vanni Sartini will suit him. I can't believe that Vanny might have picked a winger he finally likes, but it seems like it may have happened. So I think that'll be interesting in terms of on like the trialist, you know, WFC 2 side. I thought that, you know, Elliot Goldthorpe, when he played a little bit in those first couple preseason matches, had a couple nice moments. And then obviously Florio Chateau had the goal as well. So that's great to see. Nice to see both the draft picks this season, at least kind of flash at camp and stand out a little bit. I don't know if they'll, I believe they're still both unsigned. So that kind of remains to be seen. Do they sign next pro contracts? Obviously these draft picks are under no obligation to sign. They could also, seek opportunities elsewhere if they wanted. So, I guess the other notable thing that we have to mention, you talked about Ali Ahmed already, but no Sam Adekubi at camp, still nursing, working through that knee issue, and hearing from Vanni Sartini earlier today, it seems very clear that the mission for Sam is to be fully fit and ready to go for the MLS season, and that they're just, as far as Sam is concerned, the Champions Cup, this first round match against Tigres, doesn't exist. He needs that time to be ready for the MLS season. So I think they committed to that plan a long time ago, and that's just kind of what they're going with. But obviously that's an important player missing for Vancouver in those matchups. Ahmed out probably until April.
Late March, early April, I'd guess.
Somewhere around there, depending on recovery. He's a young guy. And then the other thing to note is, I mean, it's fantastic for the player, but Pedro Vite off with his country. And it's we were looking at it before the show started. It's an extensive tournament, so he could be there a while. So, you know, I mean, Ahmed and Vite, those are two of your best young players that are unfortunately unavailable for the start of the season. Adekubi, you're going to miss him for Champions Cup. Obviously, Vite should be back, hopefully, in time for the start of the MLS season. But it does affect his preparation for Vancouver Whitecaps play. He's obviously playing football at a high level. He's going to be fit. He's going to be ready. But it does potentially have an impact on building that chemistry, being well-versed in the new tactical wrinkles and all that stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of, I guess, a roundup of those exhibition matches and what I've sort of seen or thought from preseason camp so far.
Yeah, and the Vite, to that Vite point, just to chain on, it's, yeah, like you mentioned, new system, which we can quickly dive into after this. That's something Vite will have to adjust to, especially at Ecuador. He's with the, for those unfamiliar, Pedro Vite is away with the Ecuador U23s, and they're in Olympic qualifying. Just an absurd format. Like, I think really cool, just wild that they're doing it at this time of year. But it's two groups of five, like, you know, the 10 countries split up. And then you play everyone in your group once. So that's four games. If you win, or like if you're top two in your group, you go out to a group of four and you play everyone in your group once. And the top two teams go to the Olympics. So currently the way Ecuador is playing, they're trending to be one of the two teams to get out of their first group. So that there's a chance that by the time the season starts, Vite should be back no matter what, but he'll have played up to seven competitive games, more as a number 10 too, because as Ecuador, he's playing a little higher up the field. It's great. He's got the two assists in Ecuador's opening game, and he's, you know, looks like he's playing very involved offensively, but it's fun. You know, he's going to come back to a Whitecap system that's obviously different, that's changed around him. He might, you know, as we saw last year, he might be asked to play a little deeper on the field, a little different responsibilities. So it'll be an interesting adjustment period. Yeah, even for Ahmed, it'll be interesting to see, because this could affect if he plays in that Canadian men's national team game at the end of March. Looks like you'd have to imagine he's probably ruled out of that. So yeah, lots of implications across the board for those two. But kind of last point on preseason, I think what I'll always say, the last game you play of preseason is always the most important, just because it kind of gives you an idea of fitness and just what you're kind of going at for your lineup. Because especially the one they played this morning against Haugesund was very, I think, very important, because it's 8 days away from Tigres. So I think that's where you want to give guys 60, 70, 80s. Because if you give them that, they should be good for 60, 70, 80, 90 next week. So I thought it was very telling that you look at the lineup to from this game today, that it's Takoka and goal, Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman, kind of making up a three. And then it's Raposo and Martins, the fullbacks or wingbacks, I guess you could say. And then a Kubas, Schopf, Gold kind of midfield. And there was White and Pico up front. You know, for those unfamiliar, the Whitecaps have kind of been hovering between what has been like a 3-4-3, but also this lineup is a bit more of like a 3-5-2. They've kind of, but they've been experimenting with this kind of midfield diamond, like a, you know, with the four being, you know, three CMs, and then having more of a 10, like a, we've seen Krylak play a lot in that hole underneath two strikers, which is usually Gold, and either it's been Pico, it's been White. It's been a mix. We've been seeing Krylak go up front. So that was the lineup they went for today. And then Kubas lasted 45, came off as a precaution. So we'll just hope that's them kind of managing him for next week. Other than that, it was interesting. Jeevan Badwal came on and played 45. So I think that's, I have a strong feeling we might see him in some capacity against Tigres, which is great because, as we've mentioned many a time on the show, such an exciting prospect. And then there were no changes at half, which was, you know, rare because in preseason you see this whole split squad thing. And then Berhalter came in and played some wing back. Krylak came in, played up front for Pico. And then Jevane Brown came in. Laborda got to play some middle CB, which is interesting. That's something that we've talked about a lot based on his profile. JC and Gando got a run. Buster Schuberg, I think, if I'm not mistaken, came in for Ryan Raposo. And then lastly, Levante Johnson, Nicolas Fleuriot-Chateau got some run. So yeah, lots to glean, I think, from that. Because I think the big ones are that it looks like Fleuriot-Chateau really, I think he's going to get signed to the second team at the very least. And I'd say maybe expect to see him get some leaps up to the first team. He is a Canadian. So, you know, right off the bat, Canadian Championship, you wonder if they, you know, he can earn a call up. For that, sounds like he had a really strong preseason. Otherwise, of course, the likes of Schuberg, who came on. Badwal is the very intriguing one. Also, Jay Herdman made the bench, and it sounds like he had some good showings. I'd expect to see a decent amount of him. And I think Bilal Halbouni, you'd have to imagine he gets signed to a second team. The fact that as a trialist, he was on the bench in this game, but he played heavy minutes in a couple of the other games. And so I'd imagine based on the Whitecaps' kind of thin center back depth across the board, especially if they're going back to a three, having Halbouni go get his reps because, again, he's coming off a knee injury at the second team, maybe with an eye of signing him for the first team longer term. I think there's something there. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting from today's lineup, just because with it being 8 days away from Tigres, I think you can kind of gleam of where a lot of guys are at. And I think it's interesting that, for example, Gold and White played 80 minutes because I'd expect them to be leaned on decently in the Tigres first leg, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right that roster today is at least a bit of a tip of the hand in terms of what to expect from the Whitecaps in 8 days' time. Something to note as well in that match is that there was a sending off in the 35th minute. So the Whitecaps played that entirety of the second half up a man. And I think there was sort of a weird interaction where the Whitecaps wanted to play 11 on 11, but I think based on the officiating or whatever, they ended up playing the match a man up, so that may have changed some things in terms of who maybe came on as a sub and what things looked like at the end of the match. But overall, yeah, it seems really like in terms of personnel, you know, Fafa Pico, Demir Krylak, those are the two new ingredients we might see against Tigres. But other than that, it's going to be a lot of the same contributors as last season, at least for the time being, with Bjorn, obviously, I think having just joined the squad a little bit further away from any sort of meaningful contribution. So we'll stay tuned for that. The other thing to track as well is that Joel Bendik who joined the squad, I think, shortly after we recorded the last podcast. He's been training with the Whitecaps and not signed at the moment. Asked Vanni Sartini about today. He said that Bendick had done well, but they didn't have any update in terms of whether or not he'd been signed. And he didn't get any minutes today. So whether or not that means anything about his future with the club, I think remains to be seen. It's an interesting one. Obviously, I think, you know, veteran goalkeeping depth is not a bad thing to have, but at the same time, the Whitecaps have to consider between Max Anker, Isaac Bomer, who do they want to give next pro experience? Who do they want to give some minutes at the first team level? Or, you know, do they want Bomer and Anker both down with next pro, and then it makes sense to bring in a Bendick or someone like that? I'm sure that's discussions that Vanny and Yusuf Daha will be having, trying to figure out what's best for the goalkeeping group this season. But those who are calling for Yohei Takaoka to get a replacement this offseason, I don't think that's happening at this point. So yeah, that's just final goalkeeping note there, something we hadn't touched on since the last pod.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's kind of a nothing signing in the sense that it's important, right? Like, it's goalkeeper depth, but at the end of the day, Bendick's numbers haven't really lit the world on fire in many of his stops, but he's, you know, he's a vet. You can trust him to throw him in and, you know, be an MLS backup goalkeeper. Again, I think personally it's something where with the Whitecaps already signing a few veterans like a Pico, like a Krylak, you know, the fact that a lot of that back line, like, you know, someone like Takaoka, he's not young per se. I would personally like to see maybe go for a younger backup punt, right? Maybe someone who can kind of grow into that role, just because I don't think the veteran leadership is as needed when you've just signed a Pico and a Krylak. But ultimately, if it's a backup goalkeeper, you can never also, like you say, you can never have too much leadership, especially if having a Bendick allows the Bomer and Anker to really get good minutes at next pro, knowing that you don't have to call them, you know, could be calling them up every weekend to fill in a bench when they could be on the field getting valuable minutes that they need for their development. You know, maybe that could even open the door for one of them to get sent on loan too, for example, just because you have that extra body in the group. You know, we'll have to see obviously what happens with Thomas Hassall, who's been training with the group to get up to speed. Maybe there's some sort of solution where he helps fill in and it allows you to send like a Bomer or an Anker on loan to go get more seasoning so that they're not splitting too many minutes at next pro. There are options there, right? So it'll be interesting to see. So it's just good housekeeping in that regard. I guess otherwise, we can kind of shift before we dive into the new signing. That Ryan Gold and Tristan Blackman were extended over this past week. I think that's just important to note, especially Gold, because as we mentioned before, his contract was up at the end of this year. It was one where, look, we mentioned it when we were talking about it, that it's something where if you're the Whitecaps, offer everything you have. And if he says no, he says no. You've gotten good value out of him, but there's no reason why you can't offer him 4, 5, 6. And we'll find out what the final deal, the terms end up being in May when the salary numbers drop. But I think it's very encouraging that they were able to sit down and talk to Ryan Gold and, you know, find a number that worked for both parties and sign him all the way through 2027. So that's it was a 4-year extension, which is huge because so far through his, I guess, parts of, it's wild to say now, it's parts of two and a half seasons, entering his fourth, he's already become, you know, a borderline MLS all-star, MLS MVP level player. Still feels like he has more to give. Like his slow start last year feels like he could have gone even better than it did. I think it's important that they were able to lock him up just because it feels like a lot of what the Whitecaps planning is happening goes around what the future of Gold. So that's huge. And then Blackman as well, it's just he's been a key piece. It seems from like a leadership perspective on the field, he ticks a lot of boxes. He's an MLS vet. He's been very good since coming to Vancouver. It's just good to get that out of the way, get some stability at the back, and, you know, continue this trend of locking important guys up long term and not, you know, constantly having to be filling in too many gaps each year because you're losing key core pieces. So I think I don't have much to dive into, especially not on Blackman, but I guess maybe Sam, what were some of your initial thoughts at the news that the pair would be extending their contracts, especially with Gall being in that territory of being a year away from free agency?
Yeah, I think it's refreshing that the Whitecaps, their high-priced acquisition, their, kind of face of the franchise player, there's going to be consistency and continuity there, and the performances have lived up to, if not exceeded, the hype, right? And so it also seems like, hearing from Ryan after the extension, that this is a guy that's just incredibly happy and comfortable in Vancouver, and I think that leads to footballing success as well, right? Like, I think sometimes when it's an English-speaking player from, a country that doesn't have that many cultural differences, you kind of go like, oh, whatever. It's basically the same as living in Scotland or, living in Europe. And it's like, well, there's a lot more that goes into it than that, obviously, and the whole picture has to fit together. And I think that Ryan commented a lot on that after signing the extension, that this was something where he even said, his partner didn't realize just how far away Vancouver was from Scotland until they actually moved, right? Like, gee, that's a long flight, and it's, catching up with family when it's an 8-hour time difference is a challenge. These are things you don't know until you make the move. But it sounds like, he's adjusted well, his family's adjusted well, and they're happy and enjoying the football as well. And to pick up on the one thing you said, Gold made a real note that, I haven't been satisfied with the way my seasons have started the last couple of years in Vancouver, and that he really believes that the way he was performing that near MVP level at the end of last season, that's what he expects from himself from match one to match 30, what is it, 34 of the MLS season. And he seemed very, very determined to make that happen this year. He's looked good in preseason so far. For Ryan, it's been a thing where there have been niggling little injuries or fitness concerns until month two, three, four of the season. I think there's a lot of determination there to make sure that doesn't happen this year. So, man, just great to have your core player back to be able to build around that with some consistency and predictability, right? Like, that's a big part of your squad. You put a check mark beside and say, okay, we've got that sorted. Now we just have to worry about the other little things. And the same goes, obviously to a lesser extent. I think even Tristan would probably say so, but Tristan Blackman's been a key member of the squad as well. He's, positionally versatile. He's great on the ball. He's been a solid defender. He understands the league. He talked about how he came to Vancouver and he didn't really know who he was as an MLS player, and that the Whitecaps and Vanny have helped him find his identity and grow as a player. And now I think, kind of like Ryan, he's in a good stage of his life. He's happy in Vancouver. He's enjoying his football. And that's another spot where the Whitecaps can, they might be doing some tweaking around Tristan at the back, but I think they're looking forward to relying on his consistency going forward. So yeah, I think, ultimately we can maybe talk about a bit the big picture. Would you like a couple more splash moves this offseason? Those don't seem to be coming. This might be a thing where if there's a splashy signing coming in, we might have to wait until the summer. That being said, I think the consistency from year to year, the way they're tweaking around the edges and just making little subtle improvements is good. And obviously, securing the talent you believe is sort of fundamental to your squad's success is a massive part of that. It's not enough to just acquire these players, but keeping them around, keeping them performing at a high level is just as important. So I think those two extensions, real signs of organizational growth in Vancouver, because throughout, my memory of the Whitecaps, which spans all the way back to as a kid, with the expansion side, there hasn't been a lot of consistency year to year to year. How many 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year Vancouver Whitecaps players have there been that have really been there consistently at a high level. Not a ton, but you know, the Whitecaps doing what they can to lock up these guys for the foreseeable future. And yeah, as we said, try to make a push this season. You know, it gives you less to think about going into the future.
Well, that's it. You want to retain premium talent. Simple as that, right? You want guys who can be at the top level. And I think that's huge for Gauld, because as soon as, you know, especially in a league like MLS, like having just a Gauld locked up, it just immediately drastically alters your fortunes. There's less a reliance of this needs to happen just to make the playoffs. I think a healthy Ryan Gauld throughout the season is enough to get the Whitecaps to the playoffs. Like, it's not hyperbole. I genuinely, you know, especially if you can get a hot start and continuous play, and then it's nice because all of a sudden that adds, you can focus on the variability of, all right, how do you surround a Gauld so that the Whitecaps can compete for a shield? How can the Whitecaps compete for MLS Cup? And it just, yeah, it adds so much insurance that hopefully, yeah, you can get off to a hot start, because as we mentioned, a lot of the Whitecaps' best business, for better or for worse, gets done in the summer. So, you know, yes, they, as we'll finally get to shortly, they've ticked off one of the key pieces of business they did need to do this offseason at all costs, which is a center back. They still have some other roster pieces to look at. If it looks like they're not maybe the most satisfied with how the market is, well, for what it's worth, they signed Andres Cubas in April of 22. They got Julian Gressel halfway through a season. They got Ryan Gauld halfway through a season. Sam Adekubi, Richie Larea. You look at a lot of the key pieces to this team. Brian White, you know, even Pedro Vite was signed midway through a season, all the way back in 2021, I guess, as well. Like, this is, it's something where at least having a healthy Gauld, a healthy core of guys around him, like the Whites, Blackmans with the, you know, Blackman's recent extension, you know, go down the list. Hopefully that can be enough for the Whitecaps to get off to a good start this year and avoid, you know, the last few years where it's been so much catch up. And okay, maybe last year they did a little of that catch up earlier and were in a position where they could compete for top three in the West at the end of the year as they did. But man, imagine what they could have done if they could have banked some of those earlier points. And a healthy Ryan Gauld, one that's, you know, on an extension, you know, his mind will be on the Whitecaps. He ain't going anywhere for 4 years, at least, you know, before. If you think about it, contract up at the end of the year, in the summer, you can start negotiating with other teams. At least all that distraction's out the way. And it looks like he's healthy as well. He looks like he's in great shape. So obviously he has big goals to achieve this year. It's exciting to see what this, you know, what this next step, this next era of Ryan Gauld in the Whitecap shirt can look like. So it feels like we've kind of got the start, like the tease, like the adjustment period, 2.5 years. You kind of figured things out for a year and a half, and then year two or year three. But, you know, the second full year, he's like, all right, this is what I am. I'm an MLS MVP player. And even that took a bit of slow start, finding his rhythm. I think now this is genuinely a year where, like, you know, of course, I wouldn't put money on it personally, just because it's MLS. And if you're a Whitecap, you're going to need, like, I don't know, he's going to need like a 20 goal, 20 assist season to make best 11, which, again, criminal, he didn't make it. But this feels like a year where he could genuinely make an MLS MVP, MLS Best 11, MLS All-Star push. And that's exciting because, man, when's the last time the Whitecaps have had someone like that? Like, I guess you're thinking maybe like 2017 Kendall Waston. You're thinking maybe some of those prime Pedro Morales days. Like, you're starting to go back to guys like Camilo. Like, it's been a while since there's genuinely like a position of that, a player of that caliber. And that's super exciting.
Yeah, I think you laid it out perfectly there at the beginning. You have Ryan Gauld in the kind of form he was at near the end of last season, and that alone puts you in the mix for the playoff hunt. So that kind of tells you everything you need to know about the player. I mean, we were doing the report cards near the end of last season, and it was like every match you'd write Ryan Gauld, and it was just like, I don't even know what to say. Just 10 out of 10 performance. It felt like all the hyperboles were worn out the further and further you went along. So it was clear to me hearing from Ryan the other day that he's by no means satisfied with what he was able to do last season. There seems to be a fire there that it's like, man, why wasn't I like that all season? Why couldn't we have pushed for more? And I think, yeah, now with the contract out of the way, he can focus all of his energy on to, you know, achieving those levels again and pushing this team further forward. Okay, let's talk about the new signing. We heard from earlier today, the Whitecaps have added a center back. Those who've been listening to a podcast for a long time know that I've been shouting to, you know, tap those Scandinavian leagues for talent. They finally did it. Bjarne Inge Utvik. That's the best I'm going to do. I'm trying my best. 6 feet, 175 pounds. He's 27 years old. He is a day younger than I am, which is a fun fact. So, you know, we're right there in the same stage of our careers, albeit in slightly different spots. So, you know, ultimately this is a guy that's played his entire life, his entire career in Norway, over 250 professional club appearances, which is a lot of football. And he felt, it sounds like hearing from him, that it was time for something different. He captained his club in Norway, Sarpsborg, for the last two seasons, and said that he felt like, especially in those last 2 years, he took some really meaningful steps in his progression as a player, and kind of felt that it sounded, he didn't say this explicitly, but I think reading between the lines, he kind of got the sense he felt like he'd done what he could do in Norway. And if he wanted to continue to grow and develop as a person and player, it was time for something different. And when the Whitecaps came knocking, it was an opportunity he was really excited about. Hearing from both him and Vanni Sartini, described as a very tactically disciplined player, very tactically aware player. The Norwegian league, I think they're quite disciplined in their structures. There's not a lot of 1v1 ball and kind of, you know, going off the script. And so he's going to be well-schooled in that department, could probably impart some of those characteristics on the rest of the Whitecaps back line. Some things of note, he was one of the top 10 players in Norway in the 2021 season in terms of interceptions. So I think, you know, good, nice vision reading passes and things of that nature. The aerial duels, it's the thing we've been focusing on a lot with defenders. It's been a bit of a mixed bag. He's not some like elite aerial outlier, but I think a solid record of aerial success, over 60% for the most part. And he certainly has the look with the scrum cap. So maybe he could harness some of that. I think there's at least potential plus quality aerial ability there. Really anything would be better than the way the Whitecaps played in that department last season on the defensive line. And also, you know, like any Vanni Sartini center back, has to be good with the ball at his feet, a deft passer as well. The numbers kind of bear that out. So it's going to be interesting with the Whitecaps playing as they look to do three at the back again. They're going to need good performances from at least three center backs. Injuries always play in. It might have to be more of a team effort. Some internal competition will be nice. We're going to have to see, but ultimately I think that, you know, coming from a league in Norway that translates generally pretty well to MLS, there's a guy with a ton of experience. It feels like it should be reasonably plug and play. We'll just have to wait and see him actually in matches to comment a little bit more about the chemistry with Ranko, with Blackman, with Laborda, and what the best mix is at the back. But, this is an exciting and much needed move, Alex.
Yeah, it is exciting. And I mean, yeah, first off, I mean, there's, he ticks off the badass factor. Like, you don't want to mess with a Norwegian center back who wears a scrum cap. So I'm very curious to see if he brings the scrum cap, just because I think that's kind of cool and niche to bring that to the table. But yeah, I'll not pretend like I've watched any extensive tape of him playing. So again, sometimes the challenge with data, right? Like, especially center backs, like we mentioned, such a hard position to quantify, and also hard because when we're going through the off season, we're like, all right, the Whitecaps, he's good at the air, good with the ball at the feet. So we decided to look up all players who fit that profile, and they're all either some of the best players in the league who aren't getting moved, or Like, you know, that's about it. Like, it's you kind of then you also don't realize you kind of realize that those kind of guys don't grow on trees. So I think this is a good signing in the sense that he ticked immediately when I saw the signing. I opened the data and threw in kind of the inputs that Sam and I were looking for when we were looking for targets in MLS, USL, CPL earlier, and he immediately ticked a lot of those boxes. He was good at the ball of his feet. He was good in the air. He attempted a decent amount of aerials too, which is something we noted this, that some guys, they win 80% of their aerials, but they attempt like one of them a game. So they're kind of just, you know, inflating their stats because they're only going up for headers that they know they can win kind of thing. So he ticked a lot of those boxes. Then as a bonus, he has very high interception numbers. Amongst center backs, I feel like interceptions is one I trust a lot more just because tackles is like, you know, it's the old age-old debate. Usually you're making a tackle as a center back, you're out of position, you're lunging, something's gone wrong. Whereas I like the idea of a center back. It means you're able to step up, you make a good read, you anticipate. And the fact that he had strong interception numbers, I thought that was a green flag. So yeah, I thought that was just exciting that he ticked a lot of those boxes. For those curious, last year in 2023, he was playing for Sarpsborg. They finished mid-table in the Elite Serie A, but he was the captain. He ended up playing 27 games in the league, four more in the cup. He scored four goals, which was a career high for a league season. So obviously he had a great season on that regard in the box, which is something that I'm sure Ryan Gold would love to hear, that he has another target to hit. But he scored four goals. And then statistically, he had 2,600 minutes. He completed 86.4% of his passes, attempting 60 a game. So it gives you an idea he's getting a lot of touches. For context, Ranko averaged around 90%, Blackman averaged around 89%, and Laborde averaged around 85%. So he's right in the range of, you know, passing percentages. Didn't attempt too many long balls. So I think stylistically, he fits in that regard. Like, his numbers were not an anomaly when I tracked them up against Whitecaps center backs. He won 60.4% of his aerials last year. He averaged 3.97 a game. So it shows that he was contesting nearly four a game, which is kind of a range, right? I'd say that's, you know, it's not busy to the sense that there's some, you know, machines who average 6 to 7 to 8 a game, but it's still in a good range of anything or above 3.5, 4, you're averaging a decent amount that gives you a good sample size. And then he had 5.42 interceptions. For context, the aerial duels number was only lower than Laborda's on last year's Whitecaps team, and the interceptions number would have been top. And then for curiosity, before the show, I was just looking at more numbers just to see, okay, maybe last year was a bit of an anomaly. Typically, he's actually averaged around 62, 63% aerial duels before. So he actually he can be a bit better in the air than what he showed last year. And he also has been pretty consistent with his passing and goals. He typically gives you around 3 to 4 a year. So what's nice is that last year wasn't some like huge anomaly year where he just popped off, went wild. So I think that's exciting on just all those numbers. That ticks a lot off a lot of what we're looking for. Yeah, okay, at 6 foot, you maybe he's not gonna be the hugest guy, but as we know, it's about leaping. It's about all that sort of stuff. And the fact that he has 60%. I mean, what? Ranko's 6 foot and he was averaging about 53% of his aerial duels last year. So I thought all of that was encouraging. And then you add in that he's 27. So, you know, he's for a center back, that's about as prime as you can get. That's even in some cases just entering your prime. Plus, he's coming from the Norwegian league, which is nice. He had a full off season. He was able to train, but he's not coming in like halfway through his season all disoriented. So I think it might be something where maybe we don't see him a lot to start, but once he gets up to full speed, you're not having this whole, you know, just worry about it's just a normal it's a normal off season for him, and I think that's nice that they're able to scoop this up as a free agent. And doesn't I can't imagine the wages will be too large either. So yeah, honestly, I thought this signing right away ticked a lot of the boxes, and that's exciting. So we're kind of wondering, with it taking so long to find a center back, you wonder if the Whitecaps maybe would have sacrificed one of those attributes they were looking for just to get a body in. But personally, I don't know if this is just me. Just looking at all the numbers, I was very just impressed at all that. Of course, we'd have to see the tape, as Sam mentioned before the show, which is important. The Norwegian league is very different to MLS. Just having watched it as well, it's very technical. They love to play with the ball at their feet, get the ball out wide, play that sort of style. Whereas, you know, sometimes in MLS can be a bit more frenetic, a bit more bottom to top, vertical, football. So, of course, we'll have to see how he adjusts to that, especially the speed of play in MLS is typically a lot higher just because the Norwegian game is a little more technical, a little more measured. So we'll have to see how all those numbers translate, especially in the air. But I think there's a lot to be encouraged about by the profile.
Yeah, I also think it continues a theme of this offseason, which is maybe like frustratingly pragmatic, almost to the point of being a bit cautious with these signings. Like, you look back to last season, who did the Whitecaps add? They add, they add Yohei Takaoka, they add Matias Laborda, they add Sergio Cordova. Takaoka turned out to work out really well. I still think that Laborda is a terrific addition, but they didn't really think all that smartly about the fit and how everything was going to go together. It took the whole season to start to figure it out. Sergio Cordova obviously was rushed and a bit half-baked, and they changed the style of play before he even arrived with the team, and it just didn't work out. This offseason, similarly, just sort of picking around the edges with 3-4 new players. But I think these players are, very, very thought out in terms of, in Krylock and Pico, it's guys with just shed loads of MLS experience. So there's no concern about like, how will they play in the league? What's the fit going to be like? You know who these players are, what they can provide. And then here with Udvik, it's yes, a league that has some stylistic differences, but I think a season, the surfaces, the overall quality of play, a lot of the defensive responsibilities, very similar. Even something as simple as a guy that speaks pretty good English is not going to have a huge, a massive culture shock. Obviously, it's different, and he's not really lived outside Norway as a professional. But these are leagues in general where we see players, whether they're center backs or attackers, midfielders, whatever, they come over from Sweden, Norway, and tend to have success in MLS. So I feel like this is something where, you're not relying on a 10-match Sergio Cordova sample size from RSL. You're looking at much longer samples of data, consistent production, consistent success in really comparable environments. And so I understand, I feel it too, in terms of, man, a bit of a splash to get you excited that this team might be a cup contender would have been great in early January. But I think the team's been frustratingly thoughtful in terms of these additions they've made. And like you said, Alex, ultimately that big swing may have to come midway through the season. That just seems like when the Whitecaps have made their biggest impact additions. But I like the platform the Caps are building on. I mean, man, it would be nice if Richie Larea was in hand. I think that's the one thing on the sidelines here that I really like what the Whitecaps have done this offseason, but not being able to re-secure Larea throws things into just a bit of doubt because, man, I see Luis Martins in the starting 11 and it makes me shiver a little bit. I mean, that's nothing against Luis personally, but if this team wants to be an MLS Cup contender, that's not something you can be doing all season long. Right. So anyways, overall, I think I like this signing. I do like the Whitecaps approach to this window. I understand the trepidation or the want to have that player in the building that you maybe feel like can change everything going into the season, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Not just yet, at least.
Yeah. I think all things considered, it's been pretty solid. Like you say, like frustratingly solid. And again, that's also, like we mentioned, it's kind of what this team is needed. Of course, you'd love to see the big splash, but it's something also you don't want to overswing in some cases, right? Like you don't want to get in your own way. And they were almost fortunate that almost happened with the Cordova, where just you sign a big player, he doesn't end up fitting your system. It was a big danger, but luckily enough, they were able to get out of that. So they avoided that last year narrowly. It could have been a very big disaster and ends up being just kind of a funny 6 months. Remember when Sergio Cordova was killing it in League's Cup and thought it was going to go bonkers in the second half of last season. And then you're like, oh, yeah, no. That'll be something in like a few years. You can add it to the lore of funny Whitecap strikers like Fabian Espindola and, you know, or the likes of Nosa Igibor and, God, what are some of the Marvin Emnes and Dominguez? Like, oh, God, we could go deep into to that lore of players that have stayed 6 months or less. But, yeah, all that said, I think all things considered, this is a good offseason. Okay, maybe it's not a great offseason just because I look at that roster. You still have a couple U22 spots. A bit of news we forgot about, but Caio Alexandre is officially sorted to Fortaleza. And then transferred to Bahia. Whitecaps got a good chunk of change, it looks like, from the Caio fee straight up. And then it sounds like there's a bit of a sell-on as well from him subsequently being sold right away. You know, Diber Caicedo's still on loan, we have to remember. And based on how he's playing, maybe they buy him for, you know, a seven-figure fee. And all of a sudden, you got another income hitting. Heck, Alphonso Davies is linked to Real Madrid for $60 million this summer for those... who I'm sure are not very aware, the Whitecaps also have a sell-on fee on that. Maybe all of a sudden a $5-10 million hits again. Like, there's room for them to make more business than they have, but as we've mentioned, all their biggest hits have come in the summer. So it's something where as frustrating it is to wait, if you're telling me you're getting more Ryan Gold, Andres Cubas, all the players I named earlier, tight players, versus maybe you're swinging a bit aggressively to get a Cordova over the line, where it's, again, it's like a good player, but just not the fit that ends up, you know, happening, right? Or for the fit for what this team needs, then no reason to rush and make additions like, you know, the Utvik one, where I think this is going to be a good signing for what the team needs. It's another center back. All of a sudden, you think of the possibility of back four of Laborda and Utvik. That's pretty good in the air. You know, like all of a sudden, you're fixing some of those woes. Like, you have a back three, you have options between, you know, Ranko and Utvik and Blackman and Laborda. Like there's a lot to like there. Like you mentioned, there's forward depth, and at this end of the day, there is still flexibility. I think for this offseason to go to good to great, you somehow get Richie Larea over the line, preferably below the DP contract. But as we know, that's out of their control. I think overall it's been a good offseason. And sometimes, you know, as much as you want a fantastic offseason, just circumstantially in MLS, that's the danger of an off season, right? Is that you get a bit too aggressive, and unfortunately, as long as the MLS has a winter calendar, the best signings you make in an off season are free agents, guys from other leagues who have winter calendars, and you know, at best, maybe you're getting a castaway from a European team. Whereas, as we know, the summer market's the best for making good deals, so. Of course, this will be one of those where we'll have to put an asterisk and wait for see what the Whitecaps can do. But all of a sudden, if Caicedo is sold and you have two U22 spots to fill this summer, or a DP or something, man, there could be potential for them to really then take another step, which of course we would love to take it now, no doubt. But it's one of those where you look at all the factors at play. It, you know, the prudence, sometimes as boring as it may be, sometimes can pay off further down the road, right?
Well, and to play devil's advocate to myself just a little bit, while Richie Larea came into the squad and was a good member of this team at the end of last season, it wasn't as though his performances really were making or breaking what the Whitecaps were doing near the end of that season. So, you know, I like the fact that this is a team where really they haven't lost, you know, you didn't lose a Ryan Gold or Brian White like player. You have most of your core in place. You've added a couple of impact players around the edges who can, you know, they're maybe not going to start 90 minutes match in, match out, outside of Utvik, but I think they're guys that can maybe, you know, help make up some of that surplus value. And I think you also have to consider, you know, the growth of Ali Ahmed when he's back from injury. Seb Berhalter, I think, is just going to continue to get better and better. I mean, that extension was a while ago, but that's something that kind of with the Golden Blackman thing, you want to keep your talented players around that you've been able to develop and kind of nurture in Vancouver. And he's another example of that. So, you know, Pedro Vite, I feel like, continues to take steps and hopefully coming back from this this Olympic qualifiers, he can hit the ground running. I think there's still a lot of reason to be pretty excited about this Whitecaps team, and even if that addition doesn't come until early summer, I think this can still be a very good and very exciting squad prior to that. I don't know. I get the sense sometimes when you look at Twitter, you look at Reddit, and it's like somehow if the Whitecaps don't bring Larea back, this team's going to be like bottom feeding in 13th place in the West. And I just, you know, this is one of the best attacking units in MLS last season. And, you know, ultimately, okay, you, the combo of Gressel and then Larea had a part to play in that, but there were a lot of other reasons as well. So I think there's still a lot of reason to be optimistic about 2024 as it stands currently, as you said, especially if they make a Kubas Gall-like acquisition midseason, which seems like where it's trending at this point. But, you know, Axel Schuster said they were looking at bringing in multiple players over the coming weeks when we spoke with them last. Utvik is one of those players. Will there be another one that gets across the line? Will there be another two that get across the line? We'll just have to wait and see. Alex, do we want to talk about kits, or do we want to talk about what to expect from Tigres? But I'll let you dive back in if you have something to add here.
Well, we can go to Tigres, but I just want to say this is just maybe because it's on my mind because I'm reading a very fascinating book. The title escapes me right now. I think it's something like how it's changing the way you watch soccer or something. But the chapter I just read was mentioning that they tested across the Premier League. Conceding 10 goals fewer is worth more points than scoring 10 goals more. So all I'm going to say for the off-season part, yes, the offense didn't really change, but it was already very good last year, A, and B, even if it regresses slightly. The fact that someone like Bjorn Inge Utvik could potentially help them concede 5 to 10 fewer just off, you know, set pieces, aerial balls, based on what we see of his profile.
Or just Takaoka, second year in MLS, might actually be better at coming out and playing crosses this year. Like, he can improve, right? That's something to consider as well.
Yeah, like those two factors as well. Again, it's something where it's boring because, yes, you would like the Whitecaps to somehow add 10 more goals to what they've already done, or 20. Like, yeah, I'm with you. Like, if you're telling me tomorrow that we're sitting here talking about, I don't know, that they somehow went to the EPL and went and signed one of the, right? Like, of course, I'll be excited that they signed a 15, 20 goal scorer. But at the end of the day, we have to remember they had very good underlying numbers and actual numbers for goals. That the big improvement was always going to be the defense. And I don't know, I think this Utvik signing, again, given that it ticked a lot of the profiles we talked about, and we have to remember a lot of our profiles we're looking at were like USL, CPL. Like, this is guys you're hoping to take a jump up. Elite Syrian over in Norway to MLS, that's a lot more of an equivalent jump. And it looks like Utvik was one of the more standout guys despite being on a mid-table team in Norway. All of a sudden, that's like, you're, again, that's something where it just feels like this addition has kind of just happened so quick and been downplayed, because it's like, oh, like, all right, like, cool, no one really knows who this guy is. But again, I think generally maybe it's just we're getting the hype getting ahead of us because there hasn't been a signing in a minute. But generally, like, there's a lot of boxes being ticked here, and I think it's important to note that, yes, it's not sexy, it's not something where it's not the 15 goal scorer. It's like, I don't know, a center back that you know of, right? Like a Chiellini, where you're like, oh, this is, you're so excited.
Or I think even if Utvik was like 6'5", I feel like people would be way more hyped just because it's like, oh my goodness, look at him. He's never going to lose an aerial duel again.
Yeah, it's like the Norwegian fridge or something that they sign, like a Norwegian Virgil van Dijk. But like, no, I think this is genuinely, it addresses a key need. And I think, again, it's one of those where heading into this offseason, we said it from the rip, where like, of course, any ways to tweak and improve the offense. I even said a DP striker. If there's a way to make it happen, you go for it. But at the end of the day, the bigger difference between the Whitecaps finishing in first and in the West And where they did last year was it's the defense. It was always going to be the defense because you're going to have to outscore a lot of leaky games, and that's just not feasible for any team to do over the course of a whole season. So again, that's another thing to remember in all this, that yeah, like who's going to replace Gressel's production? Heck, if Larea doesn't come back, who's going to replace his production? I think there's a lot more confidence in that, again, like you mentioned, because you can get hopefully a healthy Adekugbe with the way they're managing him. You got Ahmed again, a growth year from Ahmed, a growth year from Vite. You got Raposo still growing. You got all, of course, hopefully a full year of healthy Gold. Whereas you look at the back, it was like, okay, are you going to expect all these same guys to run it back and improve? Okay, yeah, you can maybe bank on Takaoka figuring out the league, but for the most part, a lot of the other options have been around. Okay, Laborda as well. You could lump him into that category of year two. He kind of, you know, takes a huge step forward. But it's nice, again, that you have a marquee signing back to add. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there just because I was reading the book and they're talking about how, you know, there's the whole conception of you need to score more goals, more goals, more goals. That's how you're going to go higher up the table. Whereas, okay, you can't forget defense as much as we hate to admit it. And I'll be the first to throw my hands up and say I'm a purist. I love my nice football. I'd rather be on the front foot, scoring goals, etc. But at the end of the day, you can't ignore defense. I know, although we love to as a, you know, as a soccer snob society, we love to be, those anti-football and all that stuff. The defense does matter. But maybe speaking of anti-football, this is a weird transition. Let's talk about Tigres. I'm not saying Tigres are playing anti-football, but based on the fact that the Whitecaps are going to be missing some of their key players, it's going to be earlier in the season. Man, maybe it might not be the prettiest of games. I guess the good news, the bad news, who knows where we're going to be able to watch this game in light of everything going on. So if it's ugly, we'll see on that regard. But yes, all that to say that we've mentioned it a few times, Tigres is coming up. So it is important to be ready for that, for those lucky enough to go out to the island and be able to on a weeknight, secure a ticket and enjoy it. Or for those at home, it is an important first game of the season, a first official game, and hopefully the one that sets up an entertaining second leg and hopefully overall an entertaining tie no matter what happens with the Whitecaps in it.
Yeah, just a PSA at this point, a reminder. Obviously we're gonna have to see what's actually announced as available in terms of broadcasting, but you know, if things come down to the wire, as long as you load a web page appearing to be from a country that doesn't have a broadcast deal for CONCACAF Champions Cup, you can watch it on YouTube. So there's definitely going to be coverage available, whatever form it takes. What exactly it looks like remains to be seen. The 2024 world of soccer media in Canada is a fluid situation, as we've come to learn all too well. But yeah, as you mentioned, no Adekugbe, no Ahmed, no Pedro Vite. You know, this is something where, hearing from Vanny today, he made it very clear that the season starts March 2nd, ultimately, for this Whitecaps team. They're still in preseason mode. I think the moment the draw came out, they kind of knew what the cards were that they'd been dealt. And, you know, if Vancouver's able to secure a really impressive result and, you know, maybe win at home and then go down to Tigres and secure a draw and they're able to progress, that's fantastic. But I don't think this is something the club's relying on. They'd rather win the Canadian Championship again and be back in this competition next year as well. Ultimately for me, I think I'm going to kind of treat these matches a bit like preseason matches, where we're looking for tactical notes, what Vanni Sartini is going to be doing this season. We're looking for impact performances from the new players. Probably not going to see Newt Vic until later, but Fafa Pico and Demir Krylak, you would think, would be ready to go. And then the other thing I'm watching out for, Alex, you mentioned it, was the environment, the supporters on the island, who shows up. What do Whitecaps and Tigres look like on that pitch that's, you know, had some memorable cup matches in the past? I think it's going to be a point of curiosity for sure. I hope some people from the mainland are able to make the trip. I know that there's some perils to that in terms of ferry times and, you know, getting off work and all that kind of stuff. But should be fun. Nonetheless, I'm looking forward to tuning in, and certainly, you know, here on the podcast and as well as in written form, we'll have lots of coverage surrounding the beginning of Champions Cup, as it is now being called.
Yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting because, yeah, I mean, I love this tournament first off, so it's always exciting. But yeah, it's tough for the Whitecaps, really, just because they've been dealt such a bad hand. Part of it's their fault, like this venue situation, you know, how no one was able to say, hey, you know, BC Place, we made Champions Cup. Can you leave us a day on the home gardening show to play some football? That's a whole other story. But, you know, part of it also is just, man, like I'm telling you, like when I saw that draw before it even a ball was picked, I'm like, you don't want like Tigres, you don't want like Monterrey, you don't want like basically you don't want the big dogs, right? It was Tigres, Monterrey in America. They were the three top dogs. Yeah, okay, you never really want to Chivas, but you kind of take it. They haven't been as good as they usually are as of late. They've kind of, you know, been going through a bit of a rebuild phase. Brought in Cade Cowell recently, which is an interesting signing. Toluca, like a lot of these teams, right? You were kind of like, okay, you wouldn't hate that. And of course, the MLS teams, because, hey, look, the Whitecaps can compete with Tigres. We learned that last year. But this is the Mexican teams. They finished up the Apertura in December, in like late December. Tigres made the final and lost in the final, so they got to play as many maximum games. They've already restarted their Clausura. They're not 4 match days in. Tigres is currently top of the table through the 4 games with 10 points. So they've won 3 and drawn 1, tied for first with Monterrey in America. The big dogs are all up at the top. So the 3 teams you want to avoid. Meanwhile, the Whitecaps haven't played a game since late or early November. You know, just they're dealing with a bunch of injuries. Like it's just one where, look, they can compete with Tigres in April or May if it was a semifinal or a quarterfinal. I think it would have been a great tie. But for the Whitecaps, just unfortunately the draw. And, yeah, maybe you're like, okay, that's for a team like the Whitecaps who wants to be a top team. You can't have the attitude like that. But also, like we mentioned, this could derail their season, especially you're already battling some injuries. You don't want to go full tilt just to go full tilt and risk, you know, coming up short and hurting your MLS season when, as we mentioned, this MLS season is there for the Whitecaps to do something special. So yeah, it's one of those where the draw was tough. Like it's really worst case scenario, but at the same time, it's a good way to start your competitive slate, right? Like, okay, maybe if you get your doors beat off by Tigres, well, then at least that's experience that you'll take, that frustration that, okay, this is what we're up against. Maybe you try to get your lick back in League's Cup. When you try to use that as fuel, or hey, you compete with Tigres, you even win the tie. Like, okay, this really shows that even shorthanded, this team has the potential to go at things. But I just think it's important to put into context that, yeah, this Tigres team continues to be a juggernaut. You know, they've got a lot of key pieces who still remain, but they've also managed to refresh their squad decently, you know, continuing to add in the likes of Marcelo Flores, Diego Lainez, some of those top young prospects, you know, guys like Sebastian Cordova, you know, you look at that roster, you got Quiñones, who's still, he's a Mexican international now, Bolinar, like you go down through the list, Nahuel Guzman in goal, you know, Pizarro Angulo at the back, like it's a good team. So it's really unfortunate for the Whitecaps, because again, I think they want to go toe-to-toe with Tigres, but it's just such terrible. Even the schedule, like they couldn't have at least got that second slot of matches where you play the 17th and 24th. It's no February 9th. You've yet to play a competitive game. Here's thrown into the fire against the Tigres team in mid-season form. So yeah, that's a bit unfortunate, but nature of the beast. And I guess we'll see what the Whitecaps are able to make, if they can take these lemons and turn them into something else.
Absolutely. No better beta testing for the new formation, the new tactics than against an in-form Tigres side. Any vulnerabilities will be revealed. We know how intense and, you know, all out the pressure is that a Tigres side puts on you. And, you know, I'll just note, as you said, I think it's important to outline that this is not something where the Whitecaps are just overmatched against this kind of team, full stop. It's more about the stage of the season that each of the two sides are in, because man, Leagues Cup last year, I mean, you know, personally not a huge fan of the competition, but seeing the Whitecaps against these Mexican sides and performing really well, going toe-to-toe in a way the Whitecaps have never done before, was really exciting, really impressive. And man, I really wanted to see more of that this season. Maybe we'll see some more in Leagues Cup, but it's annoying that this is coming at this stage, because ultimately it's not going to be a best on best in the way you would have hoped for, but that doesn't mean the Whitecaps don't have a chance. So yeah, stay tuned for more in the lead up, and we'll talk about it, you know, before and afterwards, and see what happens over in Langford. But Alex, kind of to round out the show here, we've got Kit Talk to get into. As mentioned off the top, EAFC, formerly FIFA, the video game, you know, EA Sports continuing to fumble the bag in as many ways as possible, leaking pretty much all of MLS's new kits for this season. Obviously, it's sort of mixed up in terms of home and away. Teams are normally on a rotation of 2 years. And so for Vancouver, this is the away kit. This is the so it's replacing the blue hoop kit, for lack of a better word, I believe. And it looks like, obviously, it's kind of a low res image comparative to, you know, actual renderings of the kit, people actually wearing it, promotional content, all that stuff. But what it looks like is a pretty clean navy kit with gold lettering, so gold TELUS across the front. And importantly, and interestingly enough, the original Vancouver Whitecaps logo, which is kind of like the soccer ball with the Canadian flag inside the crest, and that's in gold as well. So they've gone, for the 50th anniversary, they've gone with a retro logo, and what looks to be like a pretty slick, pretty clean kit. I think this is the first time, Alex, in the MLS era that they've had anything other than the, you know, today's Whitecaps crest on the kit. So that's interesting. Obviously, yeah, we're going to have to wait for the little finer details to maybe make a full evaluation, but I like something a little bit out of left field, something a little different. They didn't just rehash the hoop as much as I like it, and it's slick. I think it was time for something a little bit different, and I'm excited to see it in person at some point.
Yeah, I mean, just first off, hilarious that it leaked like that. It's been a rough week for the fellas over there at EA with the FC game. So we'll add that to the misery of their things. But yeah, it leaked. Funnily enough, it was like, genuinely, I saw the leak and I went on and I bought the kit. And it, like, for whatever reason, it was showing up. Like, so I thought it was just going to, like, I thought it was a glitch and it was going to stay like that. And I didn't take a better screenshot, which is a mistake on my own. And unfortunately, I tried to play a game with it and it was the normal blue hoop. But yes, it indeed, I guess, whatever reason, the code kind of just got overwritten. They put in all the new kits, overran them onto the already existing kits. So that's how they ended up in everyone's, like, you know, because it was because I bought the kit and I just went to go check if it was still glitched out, and it's now the hoop kit as well on the picture. But yeah, it was funny that it leaked like that. And to be honest, yeah, I'm sold, because it ticks a lot of boxes what you want from a kit. Yeah, I would have loved to keep the double hoop going, like blue hoop, white hoop, keep rotating through the hoop. But you go in for the 50th anniversary, you go gold, which is something they've been doing on all their promotional graphics that matches that. You go for a bit of a darker blue, a bit more of that sleek look, the gold lettering across the board. You have to imagine that the tags will be fun, because they've done a good job of those, like, kind of jock tags where you put some cool logos. Changing the logo is cool because it's the original one from 50 years ago. Like, I think that's cool to make that nod of, you know, just your past. And then, you know, overall, yeah, we can't really tell much from this kit. I think it might look way better in person. That's what I've actually heard. And consider I'm already liking it this much on this low-res screenshot, and then the high-res few hours I got to look at it on the weekend when I bought it in the actual game. Like, I'm impressed, and I think that's the big thing it continues a trend that about a few years ago we were mentioning. Look, the Whitecaps, they've had some great kits. Like, Sea to Sky, loved it. They should try that, something like that again. They've typically done a good job of being one of the better teams in the league with kits. But as we mentioned, especially when it came to white, there's no reason why you can't lean into what you did before, especially that the hoop was so iconic. And especially given that you're pretty much like the one of, if not the oldest existing franchises in MLS that has that history to draw from to use it. And it's been great that in the last 5 years, they tried the hoop for the first time and then brought a blue hoop, did another white hoop, did a third different white hoop to keep that continuity of the white hoop. And then they've been able to lean into that history is great. And I think it's very special that on the 50th anniversary that they're bringing back an old logo, that they're bringing that gold and going all in on that, because ultimately when you're a club with history, it's important to remember that and celebrate that and not forget that. Sometimes we see that in MLS with clubs or in franchise models, or they're just kind of like, oh, we forget where we came from. So overall, I think I was very excited with what the kit represented with the logo and the coloring and all that. And also I thought it just looked pretty sleek for a blue kit to kind of have that gold. I love gold. So I think it was cool to see that on a kit.
Well, I was going to add just on the gold thing, at least you're in a position now as a club where it doesn't look a bit goofy to have gold on the kit, because, you know, they're back-to-back Canadian champions. So you've got something to back that up. I think if you had no trophies in the case over the last 8 or 10 years, putting gold on your kit is maybe a bit of a a bit of an interesting look. But I, you know, they've got some of the silverware to back it up. They're obviously looking to add more. I think the big thing for me is not that this is going to make or break it, because I think it's going to be good either way, but yeah, what are those little texture details? Because right now all we really see is the dark navy. We don't really know the finer points of the kit. And as you mentioned, traditionally the Whitecaps have done a great job with those finer details. So I suspect it's going to be even better when you see it on players in person. I'm assuming they will have gone with navy shorts, navy socks, and maybe some gold stripes on the socks. I don't know what that setup's going to look like, but I think like the all navy look. I mean, it's a bit of an LAFC clone in some ways, but in a way I really, really like. So
better gold than LAFC's, which is true. A bit more brown, I find.
What do you think it'll be like the all navy head to toe?
I think they're going to.
I can't imagine it any other way. How else would they do it?
I feel like it'll be white shorts, just because I think because their white hoop is white short, white shirt, blue shorts, white socks. I just think for kit clash purposes, you need to have white shorts to like, so it's offsetting, and then of course they can mix and match. Maybe that's why I'm curious. Well, they'll maybe have some navy shorts so that they can go all blue if they need, but then also have that option for kit clashes. I don't know. That's just what I feel based on that sort of stuff, because they are picky about rules of shorts and socks and whatnot. And typically the home and away always have different shorts, and pretty sure it's blue, but maybe they completely surprise and just go all white and all blue. But I just don't see them going all white for the home. I like the blue shorts. The all white just gives off a bit too much like a Real Madrid or something like that. And that's just, you know, not the image they're going for.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if they, so they've got the sort of like more white caps blue color for the hoop.
The hoop is dark. Is darker though.
Is it the same color as, it's not still not going to be the same color as this blue, I don't think. This looks really good.
That we'll have to see. But I'm pretty sure, because remember the hoop, this blue and red hoop, the blue in the hoop is a lot darker than it was before, where it was like that light blue. So I think they have darkened it. So I don't know. We'll have to see. That's something
we'll see how they mesh all these things together. I'm sure no matter what they do, it'll be good. But I'd like them to have like an all navy option. I think that would be sick.
They need to wear it more, because the blue hoop they had was one of their best kits and they barely wore it, which was a shame, especially last year when you knew it was coming to the end of its cycle, especially at home. Like, I think it'd be cool. Of course, you're the Whitecaps, you want to wear white at home, but I don't know. They had such a good look. I thought they could have worn it more, especially in front of their own fans, just because it gives something you know, different. And it was a very identifiable kit. This one, you have to imagine they wear it at home. It's like they're going to have a 50th anniversary.
I was going to say, this is the 50th anniversary kit. So I think in a way, it almost becomes the primary kit for this season. I will see if they handle it that way. I don't know.
Lots. There's no choice, I feel like. So that's the thing. But because that's, I've had that issue where they've actually had some good blue kits. But like Sea to Sky, they realized that, like, oh, that was a special kit. And they wore it a lot at home, which was great. But then since then, with some of the blue kits, they kind of don't wear that often at home, which I get. You're the Whitecaps. Like, that's just typical. But also, you play 17 games at home. There's no reason why you can't throw five of them in a blue, especially when you add in League's Cup, you add in Canadian Championship. Like, you're playing 20 plus games at home. At least get a handful of them wearing that alternate blue. But that's just me being picky because I love kits and all that sort of stuff.
All right, well since we're in it now, and anyone who doesn't like the kit talk is probably tuned out, I just want to touch on a couple of the other leaks. I thought San Jose doing the retro logo as well, going with the white and red, was cool. You know, no sponsor, still just like looks a bit strange, but I like that. The Charlotte FC Blue Ridge Mountains kit they do shades the Sea to Sky a little bit, except it's like the whole kit. I quite like that. Real Salt Lake as well, with the stripes, the vertical stripes sort of leading into the mountain. I'm a fan of that. And then I hate to do it, but I don't hate to do it at all. The TFC kit is a travesty. I don't know what is
going
on there.
That was atrocious.
That looks like they put it together in like MS Paint or something like that. And those are like what are those shields? Is that like just the first stock photo they found on the internet, or what's the deal there?
It genuinely looks like a bus seat, like an old bus seat, or like, I don't know, like it's giving like 90s retro, like something, you know, like those, yeah, like again, like smelly jacket, smelly bus seat or something like that. That's just genuinely what I see from that one. But but yeah, no, I'm looking at these as well. I think, like, genuinely Seattle pulling off of the green. Like, I could dig some white caps.
Some Sounders fans seem to absolutely hate this kit, but I think it looks tremendous. I think it's fantastic. But you know, again, it's one of those things where with the shorts, how is it actually going to look on a player? It might make or break depending on what it looks like in person, but in theory, I'm a fan.
Yeah, and I think New England, kind of meh. New York, like, solid. Austin, that one's a bit, I can't lie. Nashville isn't great either, just a block of blue on their chest. Montreal looks great, though. I think Montreal was a big upgrade on the gray. And between that and the blue, they're going to have two very tidy kits in Montreal. So shout out to, you know, the Whitecaps rivals for pulling up in the kit department between Seattle and Montreal, too. They're more classic rivals. Philadelphia, just business as usual. You know what? Sue me. I like the Red Bulls one. I think the Red Bulls one's very fun.
I'm on board with you. That was, you know, in terms of just like attacking you aggressively, it's right up there at the top. And and also interesting to see a Red Bulls kit that doesn't feel like overly Adidas template for once, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, and I think I love the red black combo is an easy one to play with, but just kind of the pattern looks great. RSLs, you know what? I think it's a sleeper. I think it's cool to have the mountain, especially that it's such a big part of their identity. So that, I think DC's, again, fun pattern. Like, it's a lot more fun, but it doesn't lean into the like bus seat pattern that TFC went for. Charlotte is just, well, what the heck is that? Like, what are they going to call that? Like, it's like the shirt's drowning. Like, it's, why is it like getting more and more shallow? Like, it's
interesting. I'm a big fan of the Charlotte kit. So we're again, that's one where maybe when it's like tucked in on a player with solid color shorts, maybe it doesn't work. But I like the idea. At least they went for something bold. We'll see if it pans out.
I don't know. I could be a fan of gradient. I just think the gradient's too harsh. That's the thing where it looks like it looks like pools of water or something. Like, it looks like a science experiment on their chest. Colorado's hard to tell because the pattern, it doesn't show up the greatest in that picture. So that one looks a bit, Orlando's looks very strange. Did not look like an Orlando kit. SKC Classic. The Earthquakes one, that's sick. They've had some sick kits over the last few years. Like, their white and yellow was slept on, and this one looks like a banger. LA, boring. Toronto, you know what? Overall, a mixed slate, but yeah, I'm curious to see now what's... That's only 18 teams. I'm curious what St. Louis does year two. What are they... What can they pull off? What can some of these other teams that we're not even talking about here? Portland, they always... I can't lie, that Portland flower kit might be one of the top, like one of the best kits of all time in MLS. Like, that one is impeccable. But hey, enough from the Whitecaps fans. Hey, you know what? That's what we'll say about the Whitecaps and their rivals. Cascadia, Canadian, for the most part, they're always well dressed, and sometimes that's important in a rivalry. You got to come wearing the red attire.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to seeing all those kits on the pitch starting at the beginning of March. It's coming, you know, as quick as we can possibly handle. The Vancouver Whitecaps, as we mentioned, in action almost, you know, probably by the time you're listening, pretty much within the week, getting things underway against Tigres. They've got a new center back, Ryan Gauld, under contract, Tristan Blackman under contract for the foreseeable future. Things are trending in the right direction to start this season, and we're looking forward to diving into it here on the Third Sub along with you. So Alex, final comments, thoughts here before we sign off?
Yeah, just thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll be back soon, hopefully heading out to the island for that one. So excited to see what a match day for the Whitecaps will look like in a venue I'm used to going and seeing. Pacific only games. Of course, I've seen the Whitecaps there twice, but never not playing a team wearing purple. So this will be very interesting. And yeah, just excited to get the season back. The fact that the Charlotte game is now about a month away, I'll be excited to be back at BC Place finally covering a game. So just, yeah, enjoying every minute as it comes, as it's the start of the soccer season and everything that brings. But until then, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongaruzic, on Instagram Threads at AGR on the case, where I'll be posting all of my latest work, wherever it may end up being these days. But on that note, I'll throw it over to Sam to close off episode 190 of the Third Sub podcast.
Yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. You can find us, you know, all our socials, you know, on Google, the podcast, whatever, The Third Sub, The Third Sub Podcast. Yeah, as we'll continue to dial you up with all the preseason content your heart desires, you know, getting ready eventually here for the start of the Canadian Premier League, looking ahead to the summer, Canadian Championship, all of that good stuff. We'll be with you every step of the way. So thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.